Welcome to Home on the Res. I'm Jennifer Francis.
And I'm McFavel. We're journalism students at the First Nations University of Canada, and we have been working with the First Nations National Building Officers Association, FNBOLA, to produce a series of radio broadcasts about housing on First Nations in Canada.
Today, our show is about home ownership on First Nations.
Isn't that an oxymoron? I mean, I took Indigenous studies and it was pretty clear. Nobody can own land on a reserve. First, because it's held in trust by the Crown. And second, because it is held for the community collectively.
That's all true, but that doesn't mean you can't own a house that sits on reserve lands.
Isn't that risky? I mean, what if leadership changes and they take away the land that your house is on?
I didn't say it was easy, I just said it was possible.
And what about getting a mortgage? What bank is going to give you $200,000 for something that they can't take back when you default on your mortgage?
Like I said, it's not easy, but it's getting easier. There are a couple of banks that are working really hard to assist bands and band members to make it possible.
Well, that sounds hopeful. Maybe I will be able to build a house for my mother.
You are a good son. I talked with Eddie Davis about home ownership. He's the manager of Public Works Housing and Construction for the Ski Chisin Indian Band in BC. What does home ownership mean in First Nations?
That's a complicated question because it depends on what part of the country you're in. And that means every province has a little bit different rules. So, for instance, I live in BC. And in BC, we're not all treated out like the rest of the country. So the rest of the country has different rules than BC. So I don't know what it means in Ontario. I don't know what it means in Alberta, but I can tell you what it means in BC. Now, there are several different ways that a First Nations member, an Indian, can own a house on reserve. They can have what's called a certificate of possession on a piece of land, and then they can have a house on there. Now, a CP is kind of like a title, except that to understand how that all works, you have to understand how the legality of a reserve works. The term reserve is short for land reserved for Indian use. All of the land is actually owned by the Crown, held in reserve for Indian use. So nobody can actually have a title here. It all belongs to the Crown. Now, it's all managed by the First Nations councils and governments that they have in place. So a council is responsible for granting a certificate of possession for any piece of land. It has to be surveyed, has to go through the Indian Land Registry and that sort of thing, and it's quite an arduous process. A council can also take away a certificate of possession by bound council resolution or BCR. So when a First Nations member owns a piece of property, I'll use quote-unquote owns, they might have a certificate of possession, but it's not, so they can own the, via the CP, they can have a house on the property. The other way they can do it, which is the way that we do it here, there are some CPs here, but for the most part, a lot of the houses that were built over the years, what we called DIA housing back in the days when Indigenous Services Canada was called Department of Indian Affairs, the old DIA boxes, they used to build these houses in the 60s and 70s, they were built on just banned land, and there was not a lot of people, especially the smaller communities, didn't have the education to understand how the certificate of possession program worked and how to grant those to different band members. And also a lot of the smaller communities having limited land, if they gave out all the land, they don't have any left now. Much like many municipalities that are growing and they don't have enough development land for people to build houses on, very similar. So they have what our council does in this situation is we simply sign a letter saying that people own that house on that land, but they own the house, they don't own the land. It's still banned land.
So what would you say are some of the challenges facing individuals who want to own their own home?
Some of the challenges are trying to finance, for one, and trying to find the land. So the Indian Land Registry system is very complex. So to get a CP, if someone's from a community that grants CPs, they have to go through this process where they have to apply to the Crown to get basically a piece of paper saying that the Crown is asking a Crown land surveyor to survey off a piece of land so that it can be submitted to the Indian Land Registry. And that's quite an arduous process and expensive because you have to pay the surveyor and all those kind of things. So whereas in a regular municipality, they will have a lot, and you can say, you just go buy the lot, that's it. You just pay some money, you get the lot, and then you go through their building covenants and that sort of thing. Lots of First Nations don't have that. They're smaller. There's only a few communities that are large enough to have, you know, like West Bank First Nation in outside of Kelowna. They're huge. They have their stuff together. They have a lot of income from taxation revenues and that sort of thing. They're very professional. In fact, I would say they're better than a lot of municipalities I've worked with. But most First Nations are small communities. They don't have the expertise of the individuals in those communities to allow them to figure out that whole process. So wanting to get their own home there, just the challenge, figuring out the land, figuring out the water, figuring out the septic systems, figuring out the lots, that's a huge bit. And then trying to finance it is a whole nother level.
Would you say that finding financing for like a mortgage and stuff would be relatively the same process and the same challenges that you would face if you were on reserve?
No. So last year in this particular community, I passed a piece of legislation with our council allowing band members to borrow money to build or buy houses on reserve. So a couple of banks, BMO and RBC, have very strong on-reserve lending programs that they've had in operation for quite a few years now, and they've been very successful. However, to be able to access those programs, the individual First Nations community has to adopt. They have to write a policy around it. We have policies that we spent quite a bit of money on with some consultants and went over all kind of aspects and scenarios. What happens if a person defaults and what are we going to do in all these types of scenarios? So you have to put in a strong policy, and then you have to sign a BCR and send it to the bank saying that, hey, we're going to adopt your systems, and then they can go. But there's still a process. Like, we have a process that I've implemented in a couple of different communities now, whereby somebody, and I'm working with a girl right now who wants to buy a house off of her cousin. We go in, we assess the value of the home. We figure out what kind of renovations it needs, and then she can kind of borrow the thing. She still needs her 5% down, but I have to take that to council, and I have to get a BCR saying that she's allowed to borrow the money through this program to do that. So in a regular municipality, I don't need to go to I live in Kamloops. I don't have to go to the city of Kamloops and say, hey guys, can you write me a BCR saying that I can, can you give me a basically a law stating that I'm allowed to borrow money to buy a house in this town? I don't have to do that. Here, there's quite a few processes where I have to go through the political body just in order to get that house. And then the council and the band are basically guaranteeing that loan should that person default. So it's quite a different process. And the band has the right to do their own internal kind of credit check on the individual. Quite a bit of policy work involved, and a lot of the smaller First Nations don't have that expertise to be able to put that in. And there's a lot of fear, and a lot of First Nations also don't have the financial acuity to be able to back those mortgages up.
We know that in many First Nations communities, a family can reside on a particular parcel of land, but it never becomes that family's personal property. Is this true for your First Nations or First Nations around you, or?
They don't get a title the same, so it can still be theirs. For instance, we have homes in reserve that are band land, but everybody knows it's Joe's house. Do you know what I mean? So what we've done is we've established this process where the band the council signs a letter saying, hey, we know this is Joe's house. That's it. So it's not the same. It's not getting registered anywhere. But that person, we have it in our office, and that person has a copy of it, and it gets handed down to the family. But there's no actual title. That doesn't mean that they can't sell it, because they can. We've granted ownership, and I know a lot of First Nations do it the same way. We've granted ownership to that person of that house, and they have every right to sell it.
Can they also rent it out, or is it just selling it?
You know what? So there's several different levels of housing in a First Nation, and there's a whole rental section, and then there's a private individual. So we have anybody who has a private home, it's their house. We're not doing anything with it. It's all up to them. If they want to rent it out, great. Get the income.
So have the financial institutions been supportive of home ownerships in First Nations communities?
So back in the bad old days, we used to have something called a ministerial guarantee, which is where, and this was like in the 80s and 90s, where we actually had to apply to the Ministry of Indian Affairs, as it was known back in the day. The Ministry of Indian Affairs would sign a statement saying they would guarantee a mortgage. It was this huge, lengthy process, and it was really hard for anyone to to get a mortgage. But that was for the banks to borrow money. Individuals couldn't. But now financial institutions have this vehicle where they can lend directly to the First Nations member based on their own credit. The On-Reserve Lending Program, RBC and BMO have. But at the bottom line, so that for the bank's kind of security, we want to make sure that the bank is doing their proper due diligence and vetting these people and checking their credit, just like they would anybody else out in the rest of the world. That's for us. That's for so that we know that okay, well that person's got good credit, so you know we trust them based on that. But there's still a vehicle for the bank that if that person should something happen, you know, health wise or something, some life event or whatever, and they can't pay their mortgage payments, the band has to pay that. So from the financial institution's point of view, they're doing a credit check on the band itself. So for us to sign up for this program, we actually had to go through a process where the banks got all of our financial statements for 5 years and looked at our financial credit rating before they would sign us up for this program. So from the financial institution's point of view, since we've already got a Class A rating, then they're fine.
For sure. So just wrapping up here, what are some of the success stories on homeownership that you know of?
I'll give you a perfect example. The girl that I'm working with right now, she's lived in the house that she's in for a few years. It belongs to her cousin. Her cousin had never even he inherited the home from his grandmother many years ago. He's never lived on this reserve. He lives in Alberta, and so she, now that we have this program in place, she finally has the opportunity to purchase the house and fix it up the way she wants it. So we're just going through the process right now. I just love to see how excited they are that they get to customize their own home and borrow money from the bank for renovations and just that sense of and satisfaction of being a homeowner. The look on her face, she's just very excited about this. And this is good. This is success. This is progress. And I only wish that, you know, a lot more communities could get on board with these programs and kind of catch up to the rest of the world. And I wish that everybody had the same opportunities.
For sure. So is there anything else that you wanted to add to this at all?
I have been doing this for about 10 years, and I have a lot of these policies already pre-written. And one of the things that I find, it used to be that communities wouldn't share all their policies, and I'm really happy to see in the last few years that we have groups of communities that band together, and we're sharing all of our policies together. And there are groups like the First Nations Market Housing Fund who have a whole list of policies. So, if anybody wants to figure out how homeownership policies can be written and structured, I'll give them mine for free. Like, we'll happily share ours because we would like to see more success stories.
That's our show for today. Tune in to Indigenous radio stations across Canada to hear our next show.
If you missed any of our podcasts, you can find them at www.fnnboa.ca. Look for the Radio Finboa link.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have comments or suggestions, you can leave a voice message at 613-236-2040. Or you can email info@fnnboa.ca.
Thanks to our Chase producer, Annette Ermine, producer, writer, and editor, Shannon Avison, and executive producer, John Kradowski.
Special thanks to Finboa for giving us the opportunity to learn about housing on First Nations. I'm Mick Fable.
And I'm Jennifer Francis. Thanks for listening to Home on the Res.